Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Danny Lurie, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. I kind of hinted at this idea when I was figuring out after the Mavericks podcast what I wanted to do for a follow-up with the Warriors having 2 days off, and I really wanted to do a Reddit mailbag and got some really great questions, so I'm going to do that, and I'm legitimately unsure when I'm recording this, because you never know how long answers are going to take, whether I'm going to do a part two. Might end up doing that, and then I have some email questions as well, but I'm going to start by just powering through as many as I can while giving them, of course, their proper due. So the most upvoted question was from Regression to the Dream, and it was, when Kevin Durant got injured, there were some silver linings, hopes that among other things, and lists off a few things. What silver linings have you seen from the team since Durant went out? What has surprised you? And I'll do the side question after. And the biggest silver lining that I've seen is one that I legitimately never saw coming, which was the emergence of Ian Clark. And Clark kind of got more minutes just because they were shuffling everything around. Patrick McCaw had to play some starting minutes, and then they're figuring out everything with Matt Barnes. And Clark looked really good in that, and then that led to Kerr shifting the rotation and giving Livingston, who'd been struggling and kind of still is, but he's been better the last little bit, more minutes with Curry, and then Ian Clark getting the being the point guard, defending point guards in that beginning of the second and fourth quarters. And it's worked really well. And that's been a welcome surprise for the Warriors because they've been really working to figure out all that stuff. I don't know exactly if or how that's going to impact the postseason rotation, but I think that's the biggest silver lining. The number two, I actually talked about this in yesterday's podcast, was the improvement from McCaw and Barnes in terms of where they were to where they are now, and then how that is relevant is the idea of them both being break glass in case of emergency guys in terms of a larger role if slash when either Durant or Iguodala gets hurt or is in foul trouble. And the second one, foul trouble, is going to happen during the playoffs. That's just the nature of things. But the injury, you need to be ready for that. It was one of the weaknesses for the Warriors last year, which they survived because Klay Thompson went absolutely insane. Livingston did a nice job. Everybody deserves credit for that. But you need players who can do that at positions where you're shallow. And the Warriors really went into the season with two small forwards, with Durant and Iguodala. So they needed to find that. They didn't really have it on their roster. And so this time has allowed both of them to do well. And now, especially with Omri Caspi signing with Minnesota, they're not going to replace Matt Barnes, as far as I can tell. So Barnes will be maybe not in the reliable rotation, we'll have to see, but he definitely will be one of the guys for that option. And that gets into the side question, which is, do you think Matt Barnes will get any playoff minutes, assuming KD comes back relatively healthy? And I don't think he's going to get a ton of regular minutes. So if Durant and Iguodala are both in it, unless there are two things that could make it happen. One is if they start moving Draymond to center more frequently earlier in the playoffs, which is something that I don't expect. But if they turn on that a little bit earlier, then they're going to need more minutes on from perimeter guys. And then Matt Barnes would be one of the logical players to step into that role. The other way is that he has become a great stopgap in case of, as I just said, in case of injury or foul trouble. He can fit in really well, especially if it was Iguodala in some ways. He's not the same guy. Iguodala has different strengths, but his intensity, his defensive effort fits in very well with some of the things they want to do. And he still makes some of those stupid passes, but he's gotten more judicious a little bit, at least over the course of it. I think he had 3 turnovers against Dallas, but still, I think he's been better in that way. So Kerr is probably more open to it than he was before. And that's about as close as you're going to get. The next question is from Robont. And it's an interesting one. It's, who are the top candidates to replace Sean Livingston if the Warriors can't re-sign him next season because of Durant and Iguodala's contracts? And there are a couple of big points here. One is that unless something really shocking happens, the Warriors are going to need to use their mid-level exception, whether it's the smaller room mid-level exception, which is the one that will happen if Durant wants his full max, or the slightly larger taxpayer mid-level exception, which is what they'll use if Durant either opts in, which he won't, or signs using non-bird rights, which he might. I wrote about this at length for The Athletic before and for the Sporting News. So the problem is the Warriors have to use that money. I'd ballpark it. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but I think it's probably around $6 million for a center, presumably a starting center, and then if Livingston leaves, backup point guard. And I would assume that center will be the priority there. And so what that means is you're really going to be looking for guys who are taking a pay cut. And that does limit the pool because generally players are going to take a pay cut. It's going to be a one-year thing trying to elevate their value, and it's hard to predict exactly who that's going to be. I would say the guys that seem to make intuitive sense to me that might want to play on a contender, Ramon Sessions, who's on the Hornets now, who's dealing with an injury, Sergio Rodriguez, who has been on the Philadelphia 76ers. I could see him wanting to take a run playing with the Warriors. Jose Calderon, who I think is at least pretty close to done. He was already has that connection with the team considering they almost signed him now. Maybe CJ Watson or Raymond Felton. Watson has a partial guarantee. He's probably going to get cut from the Magic. And then Ray Felton has been a minimum guy on the Clippers, so he's already shown the willingness to do that. Everybody really above that, Deron Williams, Patty Mills, Derrick Rose, all those type of guys, those guys are going to take more money somewhere else. Outside shot with Brandon Jennings as well, which would be funny considering he and Curry were the same draft class. Jennings had 55 on the Warriors all those years ago when they were both rookies. And maybe outside shot, there are a couple of restricted free agents in this class that normally you would say, well, why would a restricted free agent take a cut? And the reason why would be maybe their current teams decline their qualifying offers or something like that. And the two guys there are Trey Burke, and I would assume Washington will pick his up just because they don't have cap space anyway, and Michael Carter-Williams, who maybe Chicago decides that this, even the single year with that is a little bit too much of a risk considering they might be a team with cap space. So that's really where I'd be looking, and that shows you why the Warriors need Sean Livingston back, because most of the players on that list are not nearly as good as he is, and it also is not the biggest priority because a starting center is incredibly important, and that's also why it would be great if the Warriors could get something a little bit more out of the draft picks that they already have in Damian Jones, Kevon Looney, people of that sort, and we're going to have more questions on them later on. I haven't really spent too much time thinking about the center, so I can't say, oh, well, it's like maybe this guy and that guy, but that's really about where that conversation is. Next question is from Jammy Jam. Do you think that the team will hold Durant out until absolutely necessary in the playoffs? Will trying to integrate him at a time like that help lead him to potentially being eliminated due to lack of continuity? So the answer to both of those is no. For the first part, will they hold him out until necessary in the playoffs? No, they're going to hold him out until he's ready to play, no sooner, no later. And that is a conversation that the training staff, Durant himself, the coaching staff will and are having right now. And that's how, you know, the professional team works. They're not doing it from a tactical perspective. The body always comes first. And the reporting that came out today with Mark Stein and Chris Haynes is along those lines that, you know, when he's ready to go, they're going to put him in. And the adjustment of putting Durant back in the lineup is not the issue. If Durant, him coming back, helps cause the Warriors to lose, it's because he's not 100%. It's not the continuity because he's already played with all these guys. Durant had, I think it was 59 games playing with Curry and Klay and Draymond, and integrating him is not that big a deal if you're integrating him and he's ready to play. If he's not ready to play, then that's the issue. But again, that is not what, then you identify that as the issue, not the integration part of it. Next question is from EZLOZ31. Going forward, what do you think will happen with the young bench guys like Looney and McAdoo during some of our losing struggles? Talking heads bring up the depth and lack of experience. Do you think the front office will continue developing them or be more inclined to try signing more vet minimums for the next few years? So the answer is, as far as I can tell, is different for the two guys. James Michael McAdoo is not on a really favorable contract because he's going to be a free agent at the end of this year. He will be restricted because he has not yet been in the league for 4 years. I believe this is his third season. So whether they can keep his hold on the books is a little bit different because it will depend on what happens with Durant. Do they need to squeeze every cent out of everything? Do they have other options? But Kevon Looney is already under contract. He's already on his rookie scale contract, and it's cheap. It's basically the minimum because of the way contracts are rising. So they'll keep him around. The only way I could ever really see them dealing with Looney, there are two things. One is if for whatever reason they were really low on him and they thought they'd rather have that you know, small difference in space between his salary and the roster hold, which is probably going to be a couple hundred thousand. If they were really that low on him, they could probably try to trade him and somebody would take a flyer, just kind of like what the Clippers did with CJ Wilcox this year, where he was a guy who's on a rookie scale contract and they traded him to the Magic and then Magic had him around all year. I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're a little higher on Looney than that. And McAdoo, again, it's going to depend a lot on who else they can get. If McAdoo would come into if somebody else makes him a big offer, then of course they'll probably let him have it, even though Coach Kerr and the staff really do like McAdoo. But if it's basically him for the minimum or something like that, I could definitely see McAdoo being back as the third center or something like that, because he definitely has a connection with the team. And if he's willing to take that, then that means other people aren't offering it. And third center on the Warriors is better than being the third center some other places, considering the turnover and everything else. So I would say the biggest question there is really what Looney does to grow his game this summer. And to me, the big ways, I've talked about this before, the big ways that a player can help themselves out, particularly if they're not going to be a center, which it looks like Looney's not going to be, is they can either be adept at switching on defense, they can be a help defender, and they can shoot. And if Looney can add, improve at any of them, but really add one of them, changing it from a neutral or a weakness to a strength, then he can start to make a place for himself in the rotation. And shooting would probably be the best of those in some ways, because then he provides a little bit of a different avenue, and the Warriors would love to have a backup four, you know, somebody who can reliably fill that role, but he needs to earn it. And McAdoo, it's a little bit more standard. You know, I don't think he plays with enough force defensively, but he executes the scheme, plays with energy. So that is really kind of where he is. If he could get a lot better, sure, by all means. From DPY87, how did the Warriors get out of their mini slump after Durant got injured? And I talked about this a little bit after the Mavericks game, because I was thinking about this myself. And really, there were three different components that were running together. The first is they had that completely ridiculous schedule, and they were, you know, changing cities almost every day. They were not getting good sleep, all those things running together. Two is they were running all these adjustments because they lost a great player on the fly. So they hadn't really figured out what they were doing and where they were going. And I talked before about how the Ian Clark adjustment was something that really helped. When they were in their slump, that didn't even happen. That was after all that. And then third, Steph and Klay were both struggling a little bit, Steph more than Klay, with their shot at the same time. And Durant was such a key baseline piece for what the Warriors were successful at offensively. And without him, the variability in going on the downside with Steph and Klay was harder to survive. And also their defensive effort wasn't great. And those things all ran together and kind of lowered their ceiling and lowered their floor at the same time that they're playing a lot of road games. Their teams are always getting up for playing the Warriors. And so they lost a few games that in normal circumstances they would have won. The most obvious to me of those was the Chicago game, where the offense just was bad. And they, in normal circumstances, would have won that game going away. But because of where things were, they ended up losing. So what happened was when they got back from that, all three of those things, while largely separate variables, all three of them resolved at about the same time. So Curry's shot came back in the fourth quarter of the game against the Sixers. Fourth quarter of the game against the Sixers. Klay got better right around the same time. I think it was a little bit before that. The rest started with that game because then that's when they got home. And then the rotations, I think, was two games later. I think that was when they were playing against Milwaukee. And so they improved at all of them around the same time, just late enough in the Philly game to win that. And then the other ones, they're a better team, superior, and they got all this other step back. So I think that's really how they got out of the slump. And it's also why the win against Dallas was really impressive, is because Iguodala was also out. And so you think about all the adjustments that come with that, and they still won going away. So very, very impressive. Question from Helicase21. How do you think rotations will be handled once Durant is back, now that Barnes seems to be fitting in pretty well? Barnes probably won't be a big part of the rotation. There is this open question about how Coach Kerr is going to handle staggering the best players. So there are fewer minutes to stagger, because if you go from playing Curry and Clay and all those guys, say they're 34 now, they're probably going to go in the first round to about 38. That doesn't sound like much. It isn't that big a difference, but that's two extra minutes per half that each one of them is getting. So it narrows, if you're going to keep them separated, it narrows the amount of time. If you want to keep them together, which is fine, it narrows the amount of time that you need backup. So if they want to use Barnes, the best way to do it would actually be to use him in the minutes where there are fewer starters on the floor, and just kind of go to an idea where they're treading water, trying to do something else like that, so they can play more minutes with Draymond and Steph together, or Draymond, Steph, and Clay and Durant, whatever they want to do like that. I think Barnes fits in better in those ways than intermixed within the other players, because they have so much talent with a guy like Durant. And so that's the way that I would go with it. And yeah, I think that's about enough for that question. It's an interesting idea, though, but there are some real openings with Kerr, and also the idea that they've been doing with Sean Livingston playing with Curry is another potential answer to the guard part of this question of running a stagger with Livingston playing in those minutes, and then Clay playing either with Ian Clark or maybe with Livingston or something else. That could work, too. And then maybe Barnes fits in there if you want to slide Iguodala in more with the starters, go to Draymond at center more. That might be another way to do it. I would like that against certain opponents. Against certain ones, it's going to be a big problem because you need somebody who's going to guard the ones and a couple other ideas, unless Clay really wants to do that more of the time. But it'll be fun, and it'll change matchup by matchup depending on who the Warriors get in what round, and really even how those teams run the rotation. I mean, Jamal Murray's been absolutely killing it on the second unit of the Nuggets, and if they're not going to start him, and they end up getting the 8, the Warriors get the 1, then maybe you start thinking about using Ian Clark a little bit differently. Maybe you want the best person, whoever you think that is, to guard Jamal Murray. You shift it around a little bit. So sometimes you have to be at the mercy of what other people do. Question from Carnivorous Shrimp. Sorry if I've missed you covering this before, but for some likely Warriors playoff matchups, which bench bigs would be the best fits for each? Would Kerr play Looney or Jones at all, say in Jones' case, to match up with particularly athletic competition? I'll answer the last part first. I think that both of them are far enough out of the rotation that I would not expect that to happen. The person that Kerr has turned to in those athletic matchups so far this year has been James Michael McAdoo. And even in moments where Damian Jones has been on the team, he hasn't really gotten that option. He's been a pure garbage time guy. And that's not a surprise. Jones missed not only summer league, he also missed training camp, and he's still adjusting to everything else like that. And to put him in there for the playoffs because a guy's athletic, that doesn't sound like Kerr. He does that more with the guys he trusts, and he hasn't reached that point with Jones because he hasn't really seen him very much. But to get to the bigger question, which I actually really enjoyed, so if we're focusing more on bench bigs, one thing I have to say at the outset is that Draymond playing more at center does resolve a lot of this, because Draymond playing at center and the five out lineups and everything like that is really the best option the Warriors have against basically everybody. There aren't many players in the league that are so good at what they do that they are undeniable and can also keep their head above water against those kind of lineups. But since the question did a nice job of asking more about bench bigs, the idea is that the Warriors would not be using that lineup against bench bigs because bench bigs are in at a different time in the game. The most interesting one that I was really struggling with was Pau Gasol. Pau is often coming off the bench for the Spurs now that they're starting Deadman, which is a good thing that Popovich is doing for them, because Deadman's a way better defender. And if you're going to keep starting Tony Parker, then you need a better defender handling pick and rolls and everything like that. Pau is a big time problem for JaVale McGee because he's so smart and he's so skilled and he can play inside and out. So against Pau, I would lean on two different guys. I would lean on his they weren't ever teammates. I was going to say because of the Spurs thing, but he was basically his replacement in David West. David West isn't the same type of guy, but I think he can get Pau out of his comfort zone on the defensive end, and then he can hold firm enough against him that if you need to get a double there, you can do it. And then if they're going to switch up their rotations and go more to Draymond at center, you can use Zaza Pachulia a little bit too. I don't love Zaza in that matchup because he is not the best at pick and roll, and you can just run high screen roll with Pau Gasol and Patty Mills all day, every day. So that isn't perfect. But so I would say David West probably number one, then probably Zaza number two, and then JaVale number three. I wouldn't trust necessarily McAdoo there because McAdoo's just going to have problems. I mean, Pau Gasol's amazing. And Houston usually has Nene. I think JaVale can do a better job there. Nene is skilled as well, but I think JaVale can give him problems, make him run down the floor every single time. For those who remember, those guys were actually traded for each other. It feels like a lifetime ago when the... That's actually, for those of you who know my work, the Nene test was actually created because of that trade. So what happened was Masai Ujiri signed Nene to an extension and then traded him shortly thereafter for JaVale McGee, who at the time people thought, oh, that, you know, it's a good contract. And I think he signed an extension after that the next year. And so the idea was when you can sign an extension that the other a contract that the other team is in the league see as a benefit, that's what the Nene test is. Amin Alhassan and I kind of came up with it. And so that's a trade that happened. I think JaVale can do pretty well there. I think he'd probably do better actually than Zaza Pachulia in that matchup. David West could also do well because Nene, when he has the ball in his hands a little bit outside the paint, he can do a good job. And also Nene likes to, he does a pretty good job on switches, but I think being floating a little bit further out is not his favorite thing in the world. And then for the Jazz, they've been doing some weird stuff with their backup bigs just because Derek Favors has been out. And broadly speaking, when Rudy Gobert is not on the floor, they've been bouncing a little bit with going small. In those cases, JaVale can actually work pretty well unless the guy has a three-point shot, because then he could just dunk over them and around them. And also for the right guy, you can use Zaza in that role. And if you're really worried about them picking popping, like if they're going to use Boris Diaw out center, then probably David West in that spot. And those guys really were former teammates. They didn't screw it up like with Pau Gasol. So that's really the way that I would see it there. In terms of the other, like, I don't really want to think about the, well, I guess I should do the Clippers, because then they're the Clippers and the Cavs. So the Clippers, they're using Mo Spates. You do not want, well, you want JaVale versus Mo Spates on the other end. Like, that's one of those kind of like JaVale versus Enes Kanter, where it's dynamite points for both teams. And I could see a reason why the Warriors would be okay with that, because, you know, that probably means they're going to stay about even. But I think you could probably do better with maybe even with Zaza or with David West, just to get him to, because I mean, if you put David West on him, or even something that I've advocated for years with Mo Spates, is just put a smaller guy on him, because he's not going to post up that guy. His post up moves aren't that good. And then just get him out of his comfort zone defensively, run a ton of pick and roll with him, which is something Kerr has done basically ever since Mo signed with the Clippers. So I'm not worried at all about him bringing that in. So that's kind of where I go there. And then Cleveland, but now without Andrew Bogut, they are probably going to end up using Channing Frye a lot there. You cannot play JaVale McGee against Channing Frye. That is not one that works. And while you could make Channing Frye pay at the other end, you don't trade 3 for 2. It's not something you do on that end. Sorry, you don't trade 2 for 3, I guess is better the way we put it. And that means you probably want West out there. I would even consider trying to stagger the rotation to put Draymond at center there and then put Zaza in more against Tristan Thompson. That might be a way to do it, because Tristan does pretty well on switches. So maybe you try to change up the rotation a little bit, put Draymond in. And the Cavs, Ty Lue has generally run pretty consistent rotations, so you could probably actually kind of jump the gun on those and do it the right way and be able to beat him to the punch. I think it'd be at the beginning of the second, fourth quarters. So have Draymond ready, maybe change up his rest a little bit, maybe pull him a little bit earlier and have him in for those minutes, and then just absolutely demolish them on the other end. That might be a way to make it work, but it's going to be a lot of fun to see where they go with everything really there. And there's a lot to tackle in terms of the Cavs and how they want to run it. Do they want to play more of LeBron at the four and really challenge their wings? Do they want to maybe even put some Kevin Love there? And if it's Kevin Love, then that's even stronger than Channing Frye. If they put Love at the five, then you really want Draymond out there, because Love is going to smoke basically every other Warriors big that exists. So I think that's enough for now. There's still a few really good questions. So what I think I'm going to do tentatively is another mailbag, plus I think I have some email questions as well. And that will be tomorrow's episode, plus if there's any further news that comes out. The Durant thing I talked about a little bit earlier, but I'll riff on it a little bit now. That's really what I've expected so far. When you saw the video, if any of you guys saw it, I retweeted that Tim Cato put out there before the Mavericks game. He was looking more comfortable moving around, and nothing's definitive. You really have to see when they ramp up the activity level, how he responds to that. There's no reason to rush him back. You do exactly what's best for Durant and for for his body, and I think everybody's on the same page there. But if he's ready to come back before the end of the regular season, it's great, because then you can really test him out, try different things to make sure he can handle the workload. And it is going to be an adjustment, you know, no matter what, whether the Warriors get the one seed or the two seed, that first round is going to be both challenging but not insurmountable. So if he's below 100% in that series, they should be okay, and they shouldn't have to push him too hard. But be prepared for him to be below 100%, I would say, at least for the first round, maybe the beginning of the second round, because I remember when Rudy Gobert had this injury, it took him a little while to get all the way back once he was on the floor even. And so Gobert had a grade 2 MCL sprain, I think it was December of last season. So it's a pretty good marker for it. So that's really where it's going to go for right now. Thank you all for listening. If you have any feedback, good, bad, or indifferent, DannyLarueNBA@gmail.com, @DannyLarue on Twitter. I really do appreciate your feedback, and my promise is always, I will read it if you take the time to write it. I do not promise to respond, though I like to, and I hope to. And that's really what I do. If you want to support the show, you can leave a rating, leave a review in the podcast player of your choosing. You can subscribe, download every episode, whether you listen to it or not. And you can also check out SeatGeek. They are not sponsoring this episode, but if you go to download their free app, SeatGeek, SeatGeek, and use the promo code LOWarriors for Locked On Warriors, then they will give you $20 off your first thing, and they will still help you out. And if you are interested in advertising on the show or your company or whatever, just reach out to the same Gmail address, and I will hopefully give you a response. I should be that's the type of thing that I do get much closer to promising that I will respond to it. And yeah, as I said, I'll have another episode, probably be on the short side for that, because I'm planning on doing an episode on the Kings game on Friday. So if it's going to be a 6 episode week, then I'll probably make the other one a little bit shorter, but it'll still be, I don't think I've ever released one other than that quickie one about Durant when he got hurt the first time, when he got hurt, of shorter than 15. So that's enough rambling for right now. Thank you so much to everybody who asked questions. Still lots of good ones. That's why I'm going to keep going with it, because I want to give them all justice. And thank you for listening. Take care and make it a great day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.